Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. During this season of primary politics and curious political annex, we are thankfully distracted by our great American pastime, baseball, where hot dogs, peanuts, and Cracker Jacks still prevail in stadiums across the country. While our 40th president spent more time on the track, or in the pool, or on the gridiron, baseball was still a great love of his and an important part of his life. Even his father, Jack Reagan, played a little baseball around the late 1800s in Bennett, Iowa. Starting in the early 1930s, Ronald Reagan became the play-by-play reenactment voice for the Chicago Cubs as Dutch Reagan on Iowa's WHO. He would receive game updates via telegraph and then, accompanied by sound effects, bring the action to life with a vivid description of the details. In one famous instance, the telegraph feed went down in the ninth inning of a tight ball game, forcing the young announcer to improvise on the spot. In today's podcast, you'll get to hear the president tell the story to a room full of baseball Hall of Famers as they had been invited to a White House luncheon. We'll start at the beginning, and you'll hear him reflect on his experience when playing pitcher Grover Cleveland Alexander in the movie The Winning Team. But first, a little trivia for you. When Ronald Reagan was preparing for his role as pitcher Grover Cleveland Alexander, what professional athlete coached him? Was it Bob Feller, Bob Lemon, Ralph Branca, or Cy Young? The answer? Well, if you guessed Bob Lemon, you nailed it. Turns out, actor Ronald Reagan took a one-week crash course from Bob Lemon, who didn't think his student threw exactly like a girl, but didn't think he could hit the broadside of a barn either. Working 2 hours a day, Reagan practiced with Lemon to learn the difference between throwing from the mound and just throwing. So, with that story in mind, let's listen to our 40th president warmly welcome some of baseball's finest to the White House.
Gentlemen, go ahead with your coffee and all, but I know the time is getting by and we have a few ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. I'm delighted to, well, I can't tell you how thrilled to have you all here. And over there at the other table is a ball player who is delighted to be here, Vice President George Bush. And he did well. But I want to tell you, you span the years for me, and you've, and all these young gentlemen here are growing up as ball players. It's a delight to have all of you here. The nostalgia is bubbling within me, and I may have to be dragged out of here because of all the stories that are coming up in my mind. Baseball, I had to finally confess over here, no, I didn't play when I was young. I went down the football path, but I did play in a way, as Bob Lemon well knows. I was old Alex, Grover Cleveland Alexander. I've been very, very proud of that. It was a wonderful experience. There were quite a few ball players, including Bob Lemon, who were on the set for that picture. And I remember one day when they wanted some shots of me pitching, but kind of close up, so they wanted me to throw past the camera, and they had a fellow back there, well, Al Lyons, one of the ball players that was there, who could catch the ball back there and then toss it back over the camera to me. And the camera was getting these close shots for use wherever they could use them. And he was on one side of the camera, and my control wasn't all that it should be at one point, and I threw it on the other side of the camera. And he speared it with his left hand, with no glove on. He was a left-hander. And after he brought the ball to me, he said, "Alex, I'm sorry I had to catch your blazer barehanded." He didn't suffer any pain, I assure you. But I remember we had a fellow that I'm sure some of you know and remember, Metkovich. And Metkovich, during the day's shooting, would memorize everyone's lines. And then if we were on location and get in a bus to go back in from location, he would now play all the scenes for us on the bus. So, thinking about this, one day on the process screen, an umpire behind him, he was at the plate, and they wanted a shot of a ball player at the plate. And the director said, there are no lines, but you know what to say. He said, the umpire is going to call it a strike. And he said, you don't think it's a strike, so do what you do in a ball game when you think it's a bad call. And extroverted Metkovich, who was so happy to play all the scenes, standing up at the plate, and if you look closely, you could see that the bat was beginning to shake a little bit. And the ball came by, and after playing the umpire, bawled out, strike one. And Metkovich lowered the bat, and he says, gee, that was no strike. Picture wasn't a comedy, so we couldn't leave it in. But you know, I've always been sorry about one thing. Alex is in the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. Everyone knows that great 1926 World Series. He had won two games, received the greatest ovation anyone's ever received, and then was called on in the seventh inning with the bases loaded, no one out, and one of the most dangerous hitters in baseball at the plate. And he came in and saved the game. The tragedy that I've always regretted is that the studio was unwilling to reveal in the picture, was afraid to reveal what I think was the best-kept secret in sports. A bad habit of Alex's was widely heralded and took something away from his luster. But they wouldn't let us use the actual word of what was behind maybe his bad habit. Alex was an epileptic. And when he was arrested and picked up for being drunk in a gutter as he once was, he wasn't at all. But he would rather take that than admit to the disease that plagued him all his life. But he also, early in his baseball career, was hit in the head, going from first base down to second. On a throw from second, they caught him right in the head. And he was out of baseball for a while, and they didn't know whether forever, because he had double vision. And he kept experimenting, trying to find out if there was some way that he could pitch. And he went to a minor league club and asked for a tryout, and the manager got up at the plate and said, we want him out and throw me a few. Alex broke three of his ribs on the first pitch. His experiment had been that he thought if he closed one eye and threw, he'd only see. And the friend that was with him when they were thrown out of the ballpark said, what happened? And he said, I closed the wrong eye.
More about the president and the Chicago Cubs right after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. In the second half of his speech, the president will tell the story of his experience when calling a baseball game over the wire. And, after the president, you'll hear the commissioner of baseball, Bowie Kuhn, tell a classic story about the Chicago Cubs. But first, a little more trivia for you. Okay, so, when the wire went dead, when Ronald Reagan was voicing a reenactment of the Chicago Cubs playing the St. Louis Cardinals, who was on the mound? Was it Dizzy Dean, Bob Feller, Bob Lemon, or Satchel Paige? If you answered Dizzy Dean, you get an extra bowl of Wheaties. In reality, Dean was on the mound while Billy Sturgis, the Cubs shortstop, was at bat. He actually popped out on the first pitch, but not in the president's game. He practically made a career out of foul balls. Let's listen.
But there are men in this room that were playing when I was broadcasting, and I promised a say something here to a great Cub fan that we have at the table. And that it would make him feel good. I was broadcasting the Cubs when the only mathematical possibility, and Billy Herman will remember this very well, that the Cubs had of winning the pennant was to win the last 21 games of the season. And they did. And I was so imbued with baseball by that time that I know you're not supposed to talk about a no-hitter while it's going on because you'll jinx them. So there I was, a broadcaster, and never mentioned once in the 21 games. And I was getting as uptight as they were. Never mentioned the fact that they were at 16, they were at 17, and that they hadn't lost a game because I was afraid I'd jinx them. But anyway, they did it, and it's still in the record books. What isn't in the record books is Billy Gergis staying at the plate, I think the longest of any ball player in the history of the game. I was doing the games by telegraphic report, and fellow on the other side of the window with a little slit underneath, the headphones on, getting the dot and dash Morse code from the ballpark, would type out the play, and the paper would come through to me, it'd see S1C. Well, you're not going to sell any Wheaties yelling S1C. So I'd say, and so-and-so comes out of the windup, it's a pitch, and it's a call strike breaking over the outside corner to so-and-so who'd rather have a ball someplace else and so forth, and backed out there. Well, I saw him start to type, and I started, Dizzy Dean was on the mound, and I started the ball on the way to the plate, or him in the windup, and he, Curly, the fellow on the other side, was shaking his head, and I thought he just, maybe it was a miraculous play or something, but when it slipped came through, it says, the wire's gone dead. Well, I had the ball on the way to the plate. I figured real quick, I could say, we'll tell them what had happened and then play transcribed music. But in those days, there were at least seven or eight other fellas that were doing the same ball game. I didn't want to lose the audience. So I thought real quick, there's one thing doesn't get in the scorebook. So I had Billy foul one off. And I looked at Curly, and Curly just went like this. So I had him foul another one. And I had him foul one back at third base and describe the fight between the two kids that were trying to get the ball. And I had him foul one that just missed being a home run, about a foot and a half. And I did set a world record for successive fouls or for someone standing there, except that no one keeps records of that kind. And I was beginning to sweat when Curly sat up straight and started typing, and he was nodding his head yes. And a slip came through the window, and I could hardly talk for laughing, because it said, Gergis popped out on the first ball pitch. But those were wonderful days, not only playing the part, but some of you here, I think, will... I'm going to tell another story here that's been confirmed for me by Wade Hoyt. Those of you who played when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn know that Brooklynese has a tendency to refer to someone by the name of Earl as Oil. But if they want a quart of oil in the car, they say, give me a quart of Earl. And Wade was sliding into second, and he heard twisting his ankle. And he's, instead of getting up there, he was lying there. And it was a deep hush over the whole ballpark. And then a Brooklyn voice was heard above all that silence. He said, he's hurt his Hoyt. But I can't take any more time doing this, or we'd be here all day. They tell me that I'm supposed to go out there in front of the door to the blue room, and because I haven't been able to say hello to all of you in here, and as I say, there are many of you that were playing when I broadcast in those telegraphic report games, and not only recreated, but as I just told you, now and then created some of the ball game, but I understand that we're going to have a chance outside here, kind of a line where I can say hello and goodbye at the same time to each one of you. And now I'm going to present, no, the commissioner has something here that I think should be said. Commissioner, come on up here.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to take a moment on behalf of all of us gathered here together to thank the president for his great kindness in having us all here today. I'm going to borrow a line from the man I talked to yesterday who's sitting here in the room, Mr. President, Bob Housen. Bob and I were talking, and I said, I'll see you there tomorrow, won't I? And Bob's a member of our executive council from Cincinnati Reds sitting over here, and he said, Commissioner, I will never be so proud or so old that I won't be thrilled to set foot in the White House and say hello to the President of the United States. And I think on behalf of us all, I can say we are very thrilled to be here, to be with you, to share with you some anecdotes about the game of baseball. I want to just do one little thing that I found. I want to say to the President on behalf of baseball that I think we have contributed mightily to the President's situation here in Washington because he was a Cubs fan, as you can tell. And I've got an article I found in the Chicago Tribune which plainly indicates that baseball has prepared him for his career here. It says, for 4 years, Ronald Reagan broadcast games of the Cubs and in the process became that rarest of nature's noblemen, Dave Broder, a Cub fan. Nothing before or since those 4 years has prepared him more fully to face with fortitude the travails of the Oval Office. As a Cub fan, he learned that virtue will not necessarily prevail over chicanery, that swift failure follows closely on the heels of even the most modest success, that the world mocks those who are pure in heart but slow of foot, but, and here's the good news, Mr. President, but that the bitterest disappointment will soon yield to the hope and promise of a new season. So. We thank you from the bottoms of our heart for your kindness and generosity here today.
I'm Ed Stack, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I have a couple presentations I'd like to make. Before the luncheon, the president greeted the commissioner and myself in the Oval Office and was very gracious to sign our historic presidential baseball, which we have on display at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. He added his signature to the baseballs that had been signed by all of the presidents since William Howard Taft. And tomorrow morning it'll be on display in Cooperstown for the millions of visitors to see when they come through the shrine. Also, we presented the president with a lifetime gold pass to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and we hope that he will use it many times in the future. I'd like to ask the president to accept from us a couple gifts. The first gift that we have to present is something that Billy Martin sent from Oakland. And Billy heard about the luncheon and asked that I present this to the commissioner and to the president. And if he could open it to show the audience, I think he'll enjoy it. Johnny Mize, who's in the room today, was elected just a couple weeks ago. At the meeting, the Veterans Committee wrestled with other candidates, the many candidates to the Hall of Fame. President Reagan's name came up because we all knew that he was a baseball player in the movie Grover Cleveland Alexander, but he didn't make it on this go-round. So the Veterans Committee asked me to arrange for the Hall of Fame to present to the president today a remembrance from the Hall of Fame. Cleveland Alexander. back and have a picture of what it's all about.
Oh, believe me, I'm delighted to have this. This is just wonderful. I never had more fun or enjoyed anything more in my life than when we were making that picture. And I remember Nancy and I, we were engaged, waiting for the picture to end to get married. She came out on the set one day. I said, how would you like to have a baseball autograph with all these fellas that are all these ball players? And, oh, she thought that'd be great. And I started out, and I looked back, and there were tears in her eyes, and she was standing there. And I said, what? Well, she says, can't I go get him? But, well, I'm more pleased that we're both sort of delighted to have this. Thank you very much.
One more bit of trivia for you before we sign off today. In 1988, after winning the World Series, the Dodgers visited the White House. So, who turned to the president and said, I had a lot of success in the World Series and the playoffs, and you've had a lot of success as president. And I think the main reason is that we look to a higher power. Was it Mike Piazza, Oral Hershiser, Sandy Koufax, or Tommy Lasorda? If you answered Oral Hershiser, you once again scored. At the White House in 1988, after being the first pitcher ever to win the Most Valuable Player Award for both the League Championship and the World Series in the same year, Mr. Hershiser took the opportunity to express his faith to the president. He continued by saying, "We both believe in God. And I thank God that you're the president, and I thank God for this ball club and the great year we've had." Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast, featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.